My name is Eddie Russo, and this is the 6th of September in the year 2009, and I'm doing an interview here in Ontonagon Long-Term Care Unit with a very dear friend who was a resident of Russo, a little town named after my granddad. And I am going to start by asking her what her name was when she lived in Russo.
My maiden name was Sylvia Milliband.
And tell us about what you remember about going to school, starting when you were started there, you said at 6 years old, and around 1920. How many grades did you go through? Who was the teacher, and what do you remember about school?
We had a walk all that way. It must be about a mile from where we lived. Had a walk to school, no matter what the weather was like. And on some stormy nights or stormy days, my parents didn't dare leave us walk. They came with a team of horses to pick up all the kids from that area. They all were in the back of the sleigh or whatever it was. And we would not dare be out there in that storm. The storms were terrible those days. And but anyway, when we started school, Mary Finley was a teacher. And she didn't teach us phonics. We had to go straight to first grade, no kindergarten. And trying to read when you don't know what the letters sound like.
Did you know English before you started kindergarten?
We were mostly taught Finn. At times, I didn't make a mistake and say something in Finnish for the teacher. She says, "Oh no, this is Alan. Alan plays." You know, I said something. You know, that wasn't supposed to be because it was in Finn. And let's see, what else would I have to say about that?
What was it like going through the different grades? Did the older students teach you and help you, or what?
When I didn't learn phonics in the kindergarten like they should, I listened when another teacher came in. Hugh Harris was one. He wasn't a very good teacher either. Then Ina Kern was the next teacher, and she was pretty good, so that's when they start having phonics in the kindergarten. And I listened when she was teaching the littlest ones, I wasn't paying attention to my work here at the desk. I was listening to her teaching the littler kids, and that's how I learned phonics. Well, I was pretty good in school, except I think it's Anna Kermel. You know, she was kind of disgusted with the kids were kind of backward, I think. And she said there was Tilly Posty came from Humboldt with her aunt died, and she came back home. And she happened to be in the same grade as I was. And teacher said, if every one of you kids have to get every word when you read, every word right, or you're going to go set back. Tilly's the only one that was able to stay in that grade. All the rest of us were moved back from the fourth to the third grade. So that, even though I didn't have fun at kindergarten, I still was in the same age bracket as I should have been. all of, I don't know, then.
What was arithmetic taught like in those days?
We had a, I enjoyed arithmetic, and spelling were my favorite. I just enjoyed a arithmetic problem, like in the eighth grade or art. I enjoyed working them because I usually got them all right.
Did you have a test that you had to take at the end of eighth grade that said you had graduated from the K through eight school?
When I got into the seventh grade, I don't know just how long before that was, they thought the rules of school was so backward that they had to take state exams in the seventh and eighth grade. Well, I took the seventh grade exams and I passed. Mrs. Brown from Mass, who ran the ice cream parlor at the time, she was our, whatever you call it, not really a teacher, but she's the one we had. If we didn't understand a question she asked, well, then we'd have to ask her what it is. We couldn't ask teacher. She was just biting her nails. I think, how are they going to do that? But I passed through the seventh and the eighth grade both.
Did those tests have a bunch of questions on arithmetic, on spelling, on English, on geography, on other things?
I wish I had us. Oh, but I did. I thought I had. And here, when I was, this was in 1928, when I had those state exams. And one day, was his name, a guy from Greeland came, and he had some booklets in his hand, and he said, I think these belong to you. I said, what are they? I looked, they were my state exam papers, four of them. There was arithmetic, history, and physiology, and I don't remember more anyway. And I said, where did you get those from me? That they were in Kilmer's trunk. Of all things, they were tearing down the Greeland school, the high school that used to be in Greeland before. They were tearing that down, and that's when they found, in 1948, they found those papers.
And that was, Mr. Kilmer was the superintendent of schools then.
Yeah. And how the heck did he save them like that? Why didn't he give them to us kids, you know?
So when you were in school,
I don't know what happened to my seventh grade paper, but these were the eighth grade papers.
When you were in school, who were the characters that got into mischief, and what kind of mischief do you remember in particular that anybody, any of the boys got into?
The mischief they did, but not compared to what is known. I know Martin Post and the other one. When Ina Kearney was a teacher, he used to tease her, and she could do that for laugh because he was so funny. And then when she'd get mad at any of the kids, she'd grab her earlobe and pinch so hard that it just got purple. And anyway, then Ina Kearney was so nice. We all liked her because she was so a lot of fun. Next year she taught school in law society, and she thought, this year I'm not gonna, the kids walk all over me. And they say she was the worst teacher they had. She started off the year different with them.
And what were the main buildings, and what did the town of Russo look like?
Well, I wonder what happened to that hotel, Usa's Hotel. What happened to that thing?
I can tell you, I think around 1948 or 49, my dad sold it to Bill Hamelan, who tore it down for lumber so he could build a house.
You know, I thought it was a brick building.
It was lumber.
Lumber? Okay. When I went there one day, not long ago, I said, where is the hotel? And I missed that depot. That was gone. Everything was gone.
Now, my grandmother had a post office and store.
Right on the corner, she had a post office. She ran the post office and a little store. You need crackers or anything, you go flying from there. And she was really a like, nice person. Well, she did the township papers for every one of the ones that were run, had run. Say you were a supervisor, she did the work you had to do, but she gave the money to you. Clerk the same thing. She did all the township work herself and gave up, let the person whose name was on there get the money. She was tough.
Now, logging and lumbering were big in those days, yeah. And I know the Penegors had logging camps and had their lumbering, and my grandpa Russo had logging camps and lumbering. What was he like, and what do you remember about the logging?
I don't remember much about the logging because it was not in, you know, it wasn't anything that I cared much about. Only I knew that there's a Russo's lumber camp, you know. But Mr. Russo, he was a strict looking guy, and he beat him on a sidewalk. One day we met him during recess time, he'd like to go walk along the sidewalk. And he come and he said, little girl, schoolhouse over there. Yeah, that's how he told us that we shouldn't be on the sidewalk, we should be in the schoolyard.
Now, did he speak much English, or was it French that he was primarily?
I understood when he talked. I didn't know what he was, but I understood him.
Who were the main families that lived in that area when you grew up, the family names?
You'd laugh if I told you a story.
That's what we need, is stories.
You start from Wausau side.
Okay.
And you go along on the left side of the road. You pass John Karen and then Henry Karen. The next two houses were Matthew and John. Then you go around the corner and there comes all the Friskies. I don't know, Andrew Frisky and John Frisky and Sam Frisky. And you come back and go toward Russo way. There's Babe and Albert Russo. And then there's Hank and Joe Pennyworth. Then you go back toward Wausau side again, there's Eric Forster and Eric Milovich.
Those were the families. Wow. Later, I remember the name Karloff.
Yeah.
Were they there then, or did they move in that area later on?
Oh, John. Axel Karloff. Yeah, they lived there.
Axel Karloff.
Yeah, Axel and Karloff. I think I mentioned them, didn't I? I think I did.
What do you remember of my all my dad and my uncles? There was five Russos. There was my there was Raul, there was my dad, there was my uncle George, there was my uncle Henry, who later became a priest and spent his time in Argyle, Minnesota, right, and Uncle Babe, the youngest one, who ultimately lived longer than anybody else, although he was sickly.
Maple Manor.
Yes.
Do you ever remember he's saying about his sons?
No.
He said, Raul, he's the oldest, he's a policeman. Albert, he no good, he drinks. No, it was about George that was. Albert, he lumberjack, yeah. George, he's no good, he drinks. Henry, he's priest. And Babe, he's a mailman.
So that was going to be their careers. Oh my heavens.
And that's what I don't remember Abe doing anything else ever in his life but just bring the mail to the depot. Train was stopped there. He'd get them, keep the mail going, outgoing mail. And they'd give him a bag of ingoing mail and he'd bring that to the post office.
What did the depot look like?
Just a little bit of a shack.
Did people get on the passenger train there to go in different directions?
Yeah. I remember when Martin Posty used to go on the every spring around April, he'd go to work on the boats. And this one day he said, asked Albert to drive him to the depot, and that was to the Roosa depot. And he told this to us afterward. He said, when he said when Albert put gas in the car and he was going to drive me to the depot, he said, Arthur was right there. Axel Neamy was by the woodshed chopping wood, and he said, let me take a good look at you. I might not see you again. He popped off you and he's going on boats, you know, you'll have an accident. So, you know that Arthur died 2 weeks later of meningitis, and Axel Neamy died within that year.
Was meningitis common in those days?
I have never heard of anyone else from him. And I don't know where he got it from, or it was he sick.
What were the diseases that people caught then that they worried about and couldn't do much about? Do you remember? What kind of diseases did people get then that were bad that they
couldn't? If I remember right, Mrs. Posty died of whooping cough. That must have been terrible. It's worse than any other cough.
What about tuberculosis?
Oh, there's quite a bit on that, but then they started, there's some very many that died of that, I don't think. I know Melvina Birkin died. She was in my class in school. She died of tuberculosis, but she was in the city when she had it. And she was only 35 when she died. Her and I were the only ones in the 8th grade.
So in 8th grade, there were only two of you?
Yeah.
Well, any special events or anything that you enjoyed there when you were growing up? Dance hall stuff or anything?
Well, they used to have dances at the Roosa Hall. In fact, that Roosa Hall burned down on the night that Beatrice got married. Brother Arthur was janitor, and he doesn't know what could have caused that fire.
Was there a wedding dance there that night?
No, they had a post any mass. They had to go to mass for the wedding dance. All burned before that dance.
What kind of the people that made the music at the dances? What kind of songs and what kind of
just groups? Well, I think. Like all the other latest songs.
Polka bands or?
Yeah. Cordine, and I'm trying to think of who was there. I can't think who played, but sometimes they just have anybody that I know. Oh, a lot of times it was Sharky, that was my brother-in-law. His real name was Nestor Solari. He used to be a fiddler. And then they had John Hoodie was playing the guitar. And Larry Ellerman, you heard of him. He was playing the banjo. They had those kind of orchestras there. They were good orchestras.
Where did these guys learn how to play those instruments? Did they learn them on their own?
I don't know. My brothers all played instruments, and I don't know how they learned. At John was real good at, you probably even heard John play. And the only one that didn't play anything was Willard. But all the older ones are for the water play. He was even playing a Jules harp.
Is that known as a harmonica?
Yes.
I love it.
Have you ever seen a ringer that people like that? So.
What kind of celebrations or significant things happened that you remember?
I don't know, that every summer they'd have a picnic at the Wassup Park. That was just a little way, you know, if you know of Voiska's name,
right,
in that area. That John Earl Voiska's house is on that, where they had them at the picnic.
Now those towns had enough young men, as I understand it, where almost every one of them had made a roughshod field and had a baseball team.
Yeah,
in those days, do you remember that?
Oh yeah, they played. They all had, the boys had, were called them, and the roots are called themselves the Woodchucks.
The roots of Woodchucks. You remember any of the guys who played on that team?
Yeah, they were my brothers, John, Albert, and Arthur, and Aino, and Bill Neal, and John Neal, and maybe even Andy. Else. I know that they were the Fargo boys. They were all from there, and they were Woodchucks.
Somebody told me that the Wassas had a pretty good team. Do you remember anything about them?
I don't really remember, except that I do remember it being on the side somewhere on there towards Syringe, you know, on the left hand side. I never was there for that.
If you traveled to and from Mass City, how did you travel and how long did it take?
My mother used to drive the horse. We had a best, the nicest horse. And a cutter, you know what a cutter is?
Mm-hmm.
It hash. Somebody hitched that Bessie to the cutter, and my mother get up on that seat and drive Bessie to town. She needed some from Bess. And as she was going toward Bess, sometimes the train would be going at the same time, and Bessie tried to compete with the train.
So it was that same road as this blacktop now, but
that
road must have been clay and ruts
tough
to go.
It was for a long time that kind of, you never know what the weather be like. But boy, that when they backed off, it's a different story.
Now, it was horses then. Do you remember the first car that went back and forth, or when they started going, and they made that road good enough for cars?
I remember when three Ford Model A's were brought, no, Model T's were brought to John Neal, got one, my dad got one, Axel Carla got another, all at the same time. And my dad wanted to learn how to drive it. John Mueller knew how to drive already, so he said, I'll take you up, I'll have to show you. And when they were driving, well then, John Mueller would say something on the side of the road, and he turned, he says, don't you turn your head, you just look at that road. But he never really, I did a long time before he drove. The one that Brother John and Ida, they drove that. Whenever my dad had to go anywhere, they'd be the chauffeur and take them to town for that.
Did anybody ever have a bad accident or go off the road and end up in the ditch or the creek or anything?
There wasn't that many cars on the road those days.
How about driving the cars in the wintertime? What was the first snowfall like?
They couldn't drive in the wintertime. Do you ever remember seeing that great big roller that they
rolled? Oh, yes.
They had, I think, 18 wheels of horses pulling that heavy roller, and they start from Greenland and all the way to, we call it the White Post, which was the bit. And if you see the White Post, Ovidia Township was on the other side and Greenland Township on this side. But they passed that White Post to come into our yard so that we have like a sidewalk to our place all the time from that nice roller that past that they didn't come because it was Greenland Township. But the reason they stopped came to our place because my mother would give them coffee. I'm all coming for coffee when it was when they come and bought that nice, just like a sidewalk.
When I was a little kid in the late 40s in Mass going to school, I remember that big roller being parked in front of the school, and the kids would run around it, and it looked so huge. And I didn't know what it was for. I never asked my dad what it was all about. So now you enlighten me.
And I don't know what happened to that thing. That certainly it couldn't have rusted it away, but it really was heavy.
What about the crops you grow and ate, the animals you raised, and the wild berries you picked? What was that like? What did you bottle and can and everything?
My mother canned everything she got a hold of. We'd take raspberries and be cleaning those raspberries every night. I remember when I was already married and I went to visit with Mr. Midwerfella. They had a car, so they picked me up and they went to my house, my mother's and father's house. My dad was cleaning raspberries. And Ms. Merkel said, "That'd be the day when I see my husband cleaning raspberries." My mother said, "Well, this, my husband's just that lazy that he'd rather sit than clean raspberries and work." My dad said, "Well, there I got praise and criticism both."
And what about meat? What did you have for meat? Farm for meat, or wild meat, or
no? Meat. Well, I don't know meat. We have a lot of cows. We didn't have to. Of course, my dad said before he was had a lot of cows. He said he was standing at the kitchen door and he shot a deer the year Brother Albert was born. Shot that deer for me. That was before he had cattle and that.
What else can you think of that was?
But my mother used to order little chicks and you could hear them when they were at the post office. Do you hear that? Ever when they were there? And she took care of those little chicks every day. In the night, she'd get up to go, because if they're cold, they cling to each other. She found dead ones once in a while, and they couldn't breathe. And she had that kind of a job. She really liked to have little chicks, and then have chickens with ballet eggs.
So, what about wild? Were there timber wolves in those days that gave you problems or anything else?
I remember ever was being afraid of, because you're coyotes. Yeah, coyotes or whatever they call it. So, I don't know.
We hear them howling and yelling.
Yeah, we hear them and we say, "Time to go." I don't know if they'd hurt us. Timber wolf probably right over there. I read afterward, timber wolves don't hurt you.
What about bears in those days?
I don't ever remember seeing a bear. We used to pick those berries that the bears hang around. Berries. Didn't happen to see any. Lucky.
Did the boys go out and shoot rabbits and partridge?
Oh, they had snare wire. That's how they got their rabbits. You've heard of that.
I snared when I was a boy.
Yeah.
So you ate rabbits.
Oh yeah, my mother cooked everything. We had pigeons, and she even made a stew out of pigeons.
What about pig? Did you have pigs and did you butcher them and eat everything like the squeak?
Yeah, we had pigs.
Did you make head cheese and blood sausage and all that other stuff that I hear about?
I made head cheese one time for Bill Smith. He come over with a pig's head. He said, "Would you make head cheese for me?" I wasn't even married yet then. And I made it for me.
How did you learn how to make it?
I asked my mother how to make it, and she kind of was supervising it.
Now, what was courtship like? How did you meet your husband? Was it one of those dances or what?
I can't even remember when I met him. We need to tell the truth. I don't remember that all. I thought I wanted. Where the heck did I see him? I think the first time I saw him was Plaza Beaches had a store there in Greenland. And us girls used to go there in a store and comb our hair and put our mirror. Seems like that's the first time I saw him sitting at the counter in that place. But I did talk to him around. As for meeting him, I don't know. He must have gone through the dance in that. I really don't know.
Now, did you go to high school after 8th grade?
No, you didn't.
How did the people that did go to school, how did they get to Mass or to Greenland, or did they go and rent a room or what?
They had a rental room, or they had a board. Penelas had a lot of kids that stayed at their house, different places. Yeah, they had a rent. We couldn't go to high school because we had too much work at home.
On the farm?
Yeah.
And the boys worked on the farm, or they went and worked in the logging camp?
Yeah.
Brought money home to help the farm.
Well, they mostly had enough work at home. They didn't have to.
Okay.
This is Eddie Russo again with part two of the interview with Sylvia Savary. This is actually coming from a typed letter she sent me after we did part one, and she remembered a lot more, although some of it overlaps part one. So I'm going to still use the interview format that I used in the original one, and I will insert questions, and then I will repeat the answers that she provided again about her additional thoughts and memories of living in Russo in the early part of the 21st century. Tell me about the Russo family. She says, well, Edward Russo lived with his sons in the hotel, his single sons. Mrs. Russo had living quarters in the back of the store. She lived there, and when one son, who was a Catholic priest in Argyle, Minnesota, Father Henry, came to visit, he stayed with his mother in a little bedroom in the back of the store. Albert Russo, your father, had a twin sister who died at birth. The early name for Russo was Hubble's Mill, then Rubicon, then Russo, for your grandfather, Edward Russo, who owned the businesses there and a logging business and was a township supervisor for some 26 years. Your uncle George Russo had two boys. He nicknamed them. Little George was called Papoose, and little Jack was called Hardtack. Your uncle George died quite young, when the boys were around 5 years old, quite close in age. Your uncle Raoul never married, and he also died young as well. And your uncle Arthur, who nobody knew as Arthur, everybody called Babe, never married as well. What about cooking and food and all of that kind of chores that you had to do back in that age? Well, we had wood-burning stoves to cook on, and an oven was in the bottom part, and later they made stoves with a cabinet on the top for spices and so on. We used to buy our toast. It was called corpu in Finnish, by the barrel, and it lasted quite a while. As far as cream and milk, We all had a cow or cows. Some people had their own little dairy farm. Some just had a cow or cows for their own milk. And we sold a cream to a company called Bridgman Russell that had a creamery near Mass City, and also to some other creameries. We had to separate the cream from the skim milk. We fed the skim milk to our calves. We used a separator to get the cream off, and then we used the cream to churn it into butter. And then the buttermilk that was left was so good. It's not like the buttermilk you buy today from the store. When the Stella Cheese Factory came to our location, we began selling milk to them by 8 and 10 gallon cans, and a truck came from the factory to pick up the milk. That was in the 1930s. What about your childhood and the other characters or people that lived there? Well, there was a guy named Reddy Remo, and I also forgot to mention Joe Paquette earlier on. He was a small man, but had the biggest Roman nose I ever saw. He got run over by a train. And I don't know if I told you, but when I was a kid, we'd go to school and use a shortcut through Pennygore's woods. In the spring, we were able to go through the field when it was crusty and take a nice shortcut. We thought we could go back in the afternoon after school, but that crust would have melted from the hot sun of the March mornings and March afternoons. So I sank all the way to the ground, and my shoe packs, which were what we wore that time and were made at home actually, came off and got left there in that field. In the spring, the Pennygores had a big tank where they collected sap from maple trees to boil into maple syrup. When as kids cut through the woods, we'd get to see them cooking the sap. They gave us a taste of the partly cooked syrup. I can still remember how good it was. Later on, the Milu boys made syrup like that. And after that, a few years ago, Melvin Sulkalin made the same syrup. He was one of your classmates, as I recall. When I was a kid, I don't think they needed a license for any of that, or to drive even, or to hunt deer. How about Christmas programs? Did you guys celebrate Christmas special way, exciting way in those days? Yeah, we used to have a Christmas program. Ina Kermu started it, and then Viola Finley had them every year. They lasted about 4 hours and started right after supper. They were so good. Freddie Aho lived in Ontonagon, and he and a few other people would come to watch. They didn't even charge admission. The Russo Hall was filled. We had a few short plays like Census Taker. My sister Jenny and Gertrude Milu even played the Amos and Andy program. Jenny sang about 4 songs by herself. One was Yodeling Hobo. And each time she got to the chorus, she'd dance and yodel. We had a pair of shoe packs that my dad made out of cowhide. It was from a cow who was red and white, and nobody had worn them for years. They were so dried up. She wanted to wear them, and each time she danced, you'd hear them hit the wood floor, and that was when she yodeled. Well, how about some more of the old-timers? Well, I don't remember. I don't know if you ever heard of Eugene Cowell. He had a cabin that he stayed at in the summer. He lived in Owosso in lower Michigan, and then come to Russo in the spring to collect sap and boil it and make syrup and candy. He hired boys from Russo to work for him, my brothers and the Milu boys and whoever he could get. The boys laughed at his way of cooking. If he needed to strain anything, he'd grab anything, even a sock, and strain that syrup through it. My sister, who did day work in Milwaukee, was cleaning a pantry down there. She came across a bar of Cowell's candy. She asked the lady of the house, "Where did you get this?" She said, "A man came here pulling a little wagon, and I bought it from him." I don't know if I told her about his way of cooking that syrup. If you have ever heard of the Wilson Camp, the road to take is Cowell's Road. That's where his cabin was. The road that you take goes toward the woods, goes past the old Russo schoolhouse. Another family who lived in Russo was nearly across from our house, was named John Hendrickson. They had 3 girls and a boy. When Sigurd and Joe Morovich got married, they had a celebration dance at the hall. John Hendrickson's son, John Jr., did the collection. They sent him to Mass to buy some beer. He never came back. He took off with the money and never came back to Russo again. Hendrickson's had a man boarding there. His name was Leo Mattson. He had been sharpening his pocket knife. One night, he attacked Mr. Hendrickson Sr., and then he left. Mr. Hendrickson Sr. had 40 stab wounds in his belly. He recovered. There was a poster for the capture of the man, but he was never found as far as I know. He was one of the best looking lumberjacks that we ever saw around Russo. Well, what about house chores, cleaning, washing clothes, that kind of stuff? All the women had to use a washboard to wash the clothes. A wringer was attached to the tub. We hung them out to dry, had to pick a nice day and the wind blowing so that it didn't get the clothes sandy because the roads were not blacktopped yet. We had to use sat irons to iron them. Had three of them on the stove to heat. When one got cold, you could put it back on the stove, take a hot one and iron some more. They were heated on that old wood-burning stove. A sat iron was pointed on both ends. Some had flat irons, and they were pointed on one end and flat on the other. We usually had hardwood floors. They were varnished about once a year. My mother would wait until everyone was in bed on a Saturday night and scrub the floor using a scrub brush, and in the morning it was so clean it looked white. In order to get the white clothes looking nice, they used bluing. A few drops made in the last rinse water looking bluish, and in order to make a stovetop look black, it was cleaned well and polished with something called stove black, I think it was called. And then, of course, we had traveling salesmen. There was a man from Houghton who used to come to Russo selling clothes. He had a big bag that he'd take out of his car. He was all stooped over from carrying that big bag. He'd stay a night at our house, and every time he came, we would feed him, and he'd give my mother dresses at a reduced rate. His nephew drove him around. His name was Freb Habib. That's all I recall now, in addition to what I shared with you earlier. And so, from Eddie, I sign off with the second chapter of the information from our very dear friend, Sylvia Savary.